The most succinct version of the story might go like this. On the morning of July 11, 1804, Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton were rowed across the Hudson River in separate boats to a secluded spot near Weehawken, New Jersey. There, in accord with the customs of the Code Duello, they exchanged pistol shots at 10 paces. Hamilton was struck on his right side and died the following day. Though unhurt, Burr found that his reputation suffered an equally fatal wound. In this, the most famous duel in American history, both participants were casualties. While all the information in this version of the story is accurate, its admirable brevity creates some unfortunate historical casualties of its own. After all, if the duel between Burr and Hamilton was the most famous encounter of its kind in American history, we should be able to conjure up a mental image of this dramatic moment, a more richly textured picture of the duel. Only a fuller rendering will allow what was called the interview at Weehawken to assume its rightful place of primacy among such touted competitors as Gunfight at the OK Corral or the film classic High Noon. In matters of this sort, succinct summaries will simply not do. And so, in an effort to give this episode its requisite density of detail, to recover the scene in its full coloration, here is a more comprehensive version which attempts to include all the available and indisputable evidence that survives. Aaron Burr left his home on Richmond Hill near the southern end of Manhattan at first light on Wednesday, July 11, 1804. Although he slept that night on his couch and in his clothes, the Vice President of the United States was a lifelong disciple of Lord Chesterfield's maxim that a gentleman was free to do anything he pleased as long as he did it with style. So Colonel Burr, the military title a proud emblem of his service in the American Revolution, was elegantly attired in a silk-like suit, actually made of a fabric known as bombazine, and carried himself toward the barge on the bank of the Hudson River with the nonchalant air of a natural aristocrat strolling to an appointment with destiny. His grandfather, the great theologian Jonathan Edwards, had once said that we were all depraved creatures, mere spiders hanging precariously over a never-ending fire. But Burr's entire life had been a sermon on the capacity of the sagacious spider to lift himself out of hellish difficulties and spin webs that trapped others. No one can be sure what was in Burr's mind as a single oarsman rowed him and William Van Ness, his devoted disciple and protege, toward the New Jersey Palisades on the other side. But the judgment of posterity would be that Burr had finally trapped Hamilton in his diabolical web, and he was now moving in for the kill. Meanwhile, just north of Richmond Hill, near present-day Wall Street, Hamilton was boarding a small skiff with 2 oarsmen, his physician Dr. David Hosack and his own loyal associate Nathaniel Pendleton. Like Burr, Hamilton was properly attired and also carried himself with a similar air of gentlemanly diffidence. He also carried a military title, thus outranking Burr with his honorary designation as General Hamilton, based on his last appointment, that of Inspector General of the New Army in 1799. At 49, he was a year older than Burr, and like him was a relatively short man, an inch taller at 5 feet 7 inches, with similarly small hands and feet, a somewhat delicate bone structure, and a truly distinctive head and face. He was called the Little Lion of Federalism because he was, in truth, little. But the head was the place where God had seen fit to mark the 2 men as polar opposites. Burr had the dark and severe coloring of his Edwards ancestry, with black hair receding from the forehead and dark brown, almost black eyes that suggested a cross between an eagle and a raven. Hamilton had a light peaches and cream complexion with violet blue eyes and auburn red hair, all of which came together to suggest an animated beam of light to Burr's somewhat stationary shadow. Whereas Burr's overall demeanor seemed subdued, as if the compressed energies of New England Puritanism were coiled up inside him, waiting for the opportunity to explode, Hamilton conveyed kinetic energy incessantly expressing itself in bursts of conspicuous brilliance. Their respective genealogies also created temperamental and stylistic contrasts. Unlike Burr's distinguished bloodline, which gave his aristocratic bearing its roots and biological rationale, Hamilton's more dashing and consistently audacious style developed as a willful personal wager against the odds of his impoverished origins. John Adams, who despised Hamilton, once referred to him as the bastard brat of a Scotch peddler. While intended as a libelous description, Adams's choice of words was literally correct.